Welcome to the Skinny Podcast, where we talk all things dermatology. I'm Carol Nicotero Ward.
And I'm Terry Rudd.
Let's start with a quick reminder. Our monthly podcast is available on iTunes for free. Search for us using the keywords The Skinny, Dermatology. We hope you'll subscribe.
Here are the stories we have lined up for you this month. First, we'll hear tips for differentiating arthritis in psoriasis patients with joint pain.
Then, we'll share details of the first acne treatment guidelines to address management in children.
And the American Academy of Dermatology unveils its new campaign to spot skin cancer.
Then, cosmetic counter host Dr. Lily Talakoub explains how to talk to patients about potentially toxic chemicals in their makeup bags.
And finally, Dr. Alan Rockoff will tell us the difference between a lotion doctor and a feel-better doctor. So stick around. Let's get started. Carol?
When a patient with psoriasis presents with new joint pain, it can be confusing to sort out the various arthritis diagnoses that could be at fault. Our reporter, Sherry Boschert, has some tips from a top rheumatologist.
Dr. Daniel First, a rheumatology professor at the University of California, Los Angeles, says dermatologists are most likely to encounter osteoarthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and rheumatoid arthritis. But how do you tell the difference?
It's really fairly simple. One, the distribution of joints. In psoriatic arthritis, you won't get metacarpal phalangeal joint involvement. So in OA, the CMC joint is frequently involved, and it helps you separate OA from other diseases.
That would be the carpometacarpal joint, which Dr. First pointed out at the base of the thumb near the wrist. He also pointed to the knuckles, which often are involved in rheumatoid arthritis, but not psoriatic arthritis, which is more likely to involve the first and second joints of the fingers. And it's not just the hands that provide the clues.
In psoriatic arthritis, frequently the heel is involved, whereas in RA that's really very uncommon, and OA it's very uncommon. So it really is fairly simple.
Other than location, look for inflammation to help guide your diagnosis.
There's one other thing you should look for, and that is whether there's swelling and redness of the joints. Obviously, with redness and swelling, there's inflammation. And with OA, there's frequently not inflammation, and so it won't be red and swollen. In psoriatic arthritis and RA, there tends to be inflammation.
Acne treatment guidelines are great, unless you're trying to manage the condition in a child. The American Acne and Rosacea Society has tackled the information gap by drafting the first guidelines to specifically target pediatric acne. Mary Ellen Schneider explains.
The guidelines were crafted by a panel that included general pediatricians, pediatric dermatologists, and acne experts. Together, they sought to make treatment recommendations that would address the differences in treatment from neonates to adolescents. Dr. Larry Eichenfield, who co-chaired the guideline writing panel, said the recommendations also differ from prior advice on the treatment of mild acne.
There's a variety of choices of topical therapy, including benzoyl peroxide as a monotherapy, or topical retinoids can be used, or combination products can be used.
The guidelines feature a simple classification scheme. For instance, acne is categorized as comedonal, inflammatory or mixed, or nodular, and it is graded as globally mild, moderate, or severe. Treatment algorithms are outlined for each category.
The algorithm is set up to guide anyone, whether it be an expert dermatologist or a pediatrician, through what we think is appropriate first-line and second-line management for both pre-adolescent and adolescent acne.
With most FDA acne treatment approvals beginning at age 12, the panel had to rely on expert experience for some of their recommendations, said Dr. Eichenfield, who is a professor of clinical pediatrics and dermatology at the University of California, San Diego.
The good news is that algorithm's pretty much the same for the prepubertal acne as adolescent acne. Most people believe that the medicines can be used in a similar way. Little bit difference with younger children with oral antibiotics. You can't use cycline-based products under age 8. So there are some differences. And of course, there are differences in terms of where we may use hormonal therapy or some of the systemic therapies.
Switching gears to prevention, the American Academy of Dermatology is rolling out a new skin cancer awareness campaign. The initiative was launched during the Academy's annual meeting in San Diego. Nassim Miller has more.
Orange spots were everywhere at the San Diego Convention Center. They were on the meeting bags, on buttons, and on wristbands. It was all part of the Academy's Spot Skin Cancer campaign.
What it is a way for us to bring all of our skin cancer public awareness campaigns and programs together under one, hopefully very easily recognizable brand identity, and it's called the Spot Skin Cancer Campaign. And we're hoping to bring the level of public awareness of skin cancer up to the same level as breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer.
That was Dr. Tom Rohr, who sits on the Academy's board of directors. He said another goal of the campaign is to let patients know who the expert is when it comes to skin cancer detection.
The hope is not only bringing, raising the level of public awareness, but also motivating people to really change their behaviors, to protect themselves from skin cancer, to detect skin cancer at its earliest stages. And then important in this whole campaign is to motivate people to see their board-certified dermatologist, to get any suspicious lesion checked out and then treat it as early as it possibly can so they can live. So our tagline is prevent, detect, and live. Very positive message.
The Academy plans to roll out the campaign on melanoma Monday, May 7th.
Now it's time for our monthly segment, Cosmetic Counter, with Dr. Lily Talakoub. This month, she discusses what to do when a patient comes in distressed about the lead in her lipstick. Dr. Talakoub, who practices in McLean, Virginia, says many of the chemicals in cosmetic products aren't regulated, and the list of toxic-sounding ingredients can be a bit daunting. But there are a few things you can do to put your patients at ease.
When your patients ask you about these harmful chemicals in both cosmetics and skincares, there are a couple ways to approach this problem. First of all, there's many chemicals out there on the market. Many of these chemicals are not regulated by the FDA. If a product is a cosmetic or a product is a cosmeceutical, oftentimes a lot of the chemicals that are in are not actually controlled. It's not an over-the-counter drug. Over-the-counter drugs are the only things that are actually regulated and tested. Many of the chemicals that are in products, however, are not in high enough concentration to actually cause a significant risk, although these agents in high concentrations do cause risks if ingested or accumulate over time. Many of the patients ask about whether or not they should be buying them or they should be applying them on the face. These are my tips. The first thing you can say to your patients is that, yes, there are harmful chemicals and they're not necessarily regulated. Doing their research on the web is the most important factor. There's a website from the Environmental Working Group that does highlight many chemicals that have been tested in cosmetic products. Doing their research will help them choose the best product. The second thing I tell them is not necessarily do any of these in small quantities actually pose a health risk. Large quantities when ingested may, but small quantities when applied to the face may not. Over time, however, cumulative exposure is an important risk factor. Using their judgment and doing their research will help choose the best products. There are, however, several that have serious risks. Lead, parabens, mercury in products are some of those that if you choose wisely in your products, the patients will be able to choose the products that avoid these agents. So the three tips for our patients is do the research, look online, avoid things with paraben, lead, or mercury, and cumulative exposure may not actually result in significant risks.
And now, from his office in Brookline, Massachusetts, Dr. Alan Rockoff shares some insights from his 3-year-old grandson about what a good doctor should do.
During a visit to the Midwest, I was reading my Kansas grandson, age 3.5, a book about his favorite obsession, trucks. "Maybe when you grow up, you'll drive one like that," I suggested. "No," he said, "I want to be a doctor." "Really?" I asked. "Do you know any doctors in your family?" "No," he said. "What about me?" I asked. "You're a lotion doctor," he said. Then the other day, my mother and I had a Skype session with him from here in Boston. Between bites of broccoli, he told us about his visit to a fire station, a peak life experience for a 3-year-old. "When you grow up," my mother asked him, "would you like to be a fireman?" "A doctor," he said. "A lotion doctor?" she asked. "No," he said, "a feel-better doctor." My grandchildren are all charming and brilliant, of course. But what makes kids great is the way they get right to the heart of things, no hedging or fudging. Even at 3, my grandson knows you go to the doctor not just for the right diagnosis or the right treatment or for a statistically significant delta on a validated quality of life measure. You go to the doctor to feel better. So what kind of doctor should you go to? A feel-better doctor. Good to remember. Then he went on to declare and repeat, "And I am not going to give anybody any cavities." There's certainly something profound in there too, but I'm too grown up to know what it is. This is Dr. Alan Rockoff reminding you to brush and floss regularly. You'll feel better.
Well, that's it for us. We'd like to thank this month's contributing reporter, Sherry Bocher. Our producers are Nassim Miller and Mary Ellen Schneider. And this podcast comes together under the guidance of Skin and Allergy News Managing Editor, Amy Piper. I'm Terry Rudd.
I'm Carol Nicotero Ward. Don't forget to visit our website, skinandallergynews.com. And remember, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes for free. Just search for The Skinny. We'll be back with more news in May.